pool vegetation. The shrimp were proving too difficult to catch, though Gov sat determinedly, his line hanging in the water, baited with a piece of limpet. Gradually, it was taken by something which pulled it beneath an underwater ledge.
Ha ha, mateys! I've got a bite!
He shouted excitedly.
Look out! Here comes supper!
Assisted by Martin, he pulled and tugged at the line. Finally, they hauled up a small spidery object with a soft shell and two tiny claws.
Throw it back, it's a crab!
Logalog called urgently to them. Martin took hold of the small crab as Gov tried to unlatch its claws from the segment of bait. There was a scrabbling and clattering noise at the poolside, and a huge carapace emerged. Logalog slashed the line with his knife, leaving the baby crab to enjoy the bait. The water splashed away, displaced by a considerable bulk. Four blackish-grey armoured legs clawed the way over the edge of the rock. It was a fully grown crab. The monster stood in front of them, its eyes roving hither and thither on long stalks. Two large plates opened, revealing a downward slanting mouth which shed water and gaped open at them. But it was the creature's claws which caused the most concern. Large, powerful pincers held high, snapping open and shut with a noise like steel hitting stone. They were studded with horny nodules that resembled teeth.
Back off, don't try to fight it, you'll lose,
Logalog said, not taking his eyes from the angry crab.
Keep backing off until we're on the sand, then we really have to run for it. Crabs can scuttle sideways very fast.
They retreated carefully. The big crab blew a bubble from its mouth, lowered its claws, snapped them viciously at the intruders, and charged like lightning. Now that Clud was gone, Sarmina needed a new captain of the guard, so she promoted Brog the Weasel. At first, Brog enjoyed his position of power, but of late he was sorry that he had ever donned the cloak of captaincy, particularly when he was called up to be interviewed by the Queen in her chambers.
Brog, I made you captain. You must find Gingerfear. He has kidnapped Ashleg.
Yes, Majesty.
Find yourself another captain. That stoat, Ratflank, he'll do,
she suggested.
I want you to go through the entire army, one by one.
Go through the army, milady?
He asked, puzzled.
Yes, jellybrains. You and Ratflank take them one by one to the cells.
Yes, milady.
Will you stop interrupting me and listen? All anyone ever says around here is yes, milady, or no, milady.
Yes, milady.
Shut up!
Sarmina shouted irritably.
Get them one by one in a cell. Pull their whiskers, then check their fur. Is their tail their own tail?
Is it, milady?
That's what I want you to find out, nitwit!
Oh, yes. But why, milady?
Sarmina paced the room, her voice rising to a crack crescendo.
Because one of them is Gingerfear in disguise, you clod! He's here in my fortress, plotting against me. Get out and find him!
Later, Brog sat at a barrack room table, joined by Ratflank and several other cronies. They were reduced to eating hard bread and woodland plants. Brog sipped from a flagon.
Huh. At least there's still a drop of cider left. I tell you, mates, the Queen has definitely taken a funny turn.
Oh, I don't know,
Ratflank smirked.
She's still got the sense to recognise a good stoat when she sees one. Look at me. I'm a captain now.
One of the ferrets spat out a mouldy crust.
Is that some kind of ceremony you carried out, Brog?
He asked.
What ceremony? What are you talking about, dog fur?
Well, the way you took Ratflank down to the cells and twitched his whiskers, then you pinched his fur and twitched his tail before you gave him the captain's cloak.
Oh, no. Matter of fact, you've all got to have it done.
What? You mean we're all going to be made captains?
God, I wish old Lord Greeneyes was here now, mate.
Brog sighed gloomily as he cupped his head in his paws.
Or even the other one, Gingerfear.
Warm sun rays cascading through the leaves mingled in harmony with the peace of moss flower woods. Somewhere a cuckoo was calling, and young ferns curled the tendril tops toward blossom on the bramble. Gingerfear had travelled east since early morning, never once turning his head to look back toward Brockhall. He sat with his back to his sycamore and opened the satchel of food given him by the woodlanders. The very sight of a homely oat cake brought a lump to his throat at the thought of the good friends he had left behind, especially of little Ferdy and Cogs. With unshed tears bright in his eyes, Gingerfear wrapped the food up. He continued walking east through the peaceful flowering forest.
Chapter 33.
Martin leapt to the fore as the crab came charging forward.
Hurry! Get down to the sands!
He shouted urgently.
I'll try to hold this thing off. Go on, get going!
The three travellers would not run and desert their friend. They backed away slowly to the edge of the rocks, while Martin, facing the crab as a rearguard, followed them. The crab would make a scurrying attack, then back off, suddenly changing tack to shuffling sideways. Not having time to use his sling, Martin hurled several well-placed stones at the maddened creature. They made a hollow clunking noise as they bounced off the tough crab shell. Each time it was hit, the crab would halt, pulling its eyes in on the long stalks, holding one claw high and the other out level toward them. It advanced, for all the world like a fencer, minus his sword. The huge claws opened and shut, clacking viciously. From the top of the rocky outcrop where they stood to the sand below was a forbiddingly long drop. Logalog teetered on the brink, shutting his eyes tight at the dizzy height. Without a second thought, Gonf grabbed the shrew's scrubby coat with one paw, held tight to Dinny's digging claw with the other, and jumped. As Dinny felt himself being pulled from the smooth rock surface, he seized Martin's tail with his free digging claw. The crab dashed forward, only to find his pincers nipping nothing. Clutching paw to fur to claw to tail, the travellers sailed out into mid-air and plummeted downward, narrowly missing the jutting rocks which projected from the main mass. Bump! They landed flat upon the beach sand with a dull thud that knocked the breath from their bodies. Martin was first to recover. He sat up rubbing his back, feeling as if his tail had been dragged out by the roots. Dinny lay face down. He lifted his head, snorted sand, and looked up at the rock face.
Ooh, or look out, he coming down,
he warned. Sure enough, the crab was scrambling and scuttling sideways down the rocks toward them with surprising agility. Ignoring his injuries, Martin ran to face the armoured menace as his friends recovered from the fall. Grabbing a stave, he hit out strongly at the creature. With a loud clack, the crustacean caught the flailing stave between both his claws, immediately locking tight onto it, wrenching the weapon from the warrior's grasp. Martin felt totally helpless as he readied himself for the crab's next move. Wailing and prancing about on the sand with his slit-like mouth gaping and frothing, the crab clutched madly at the stave. Martin could only stare in amazement at the dancing monster as it jigged about, holding the stave high in its murderous claws. Logalog tugged at the warrior's paw.
Come on, Martin, let's get going while we can. That crab doesn't seem to want to let go of the stave.
Ha!
Gonf snorted.
It's not a case of wanting. It hasn't got the sense to release the stave, can't you see?
As if to prove his point, the little mouse thief joined the crab and actually began dancing along with it. Round and round they went, Gonf comically following his strange partner's every twist and turn. Furiously, the crab waggled its stalked eyes, opening and closing its mouth as it pranced crazily around, still clasping the stave tightly. Martin and his friends nursed their aching ribs, trying not to laugh too hard. Tears streamed down their cheeks at Gonf's antics.
Stop it, Gonf, please!
Martin begged.
Come away and leave that silly beast alone!
Gonf halted. He doffed a courtly bow at the enraged crab.
My thanks to you, sir. You truly are a wonderful dancer.
The crab stood glaring at Gonf with a mixture of ferocity and bafflement as the mouse thief continued his polite compliments.
Oh, I do hope we meet again at the next annual rock pool ball. Those shrimps are such clumsy fellows, you know. They tread all over one's paws. They're not half as good as you. Incidentally, who taught you to dance so well? Keeping all those legs going together. You didn't trip once. My, my, we really must do this again sometime.
The crab stood stock still with the stave held high. It watched the four travellers depart along the shore, their laughter and jesting mingled on the breeze.
Wait till I tell Columbine. Maybe he'll give her dancing lessons if we ever chance this way again.
Brr, he'm a wonderful foot tapper.
What about you, Din? You could have joined them for a threesome reel.
It had been an eventful day. Now, as the noon shadows began lengthening, the tide flooded in. The friends wended their weary way along the interminable shoreline. Salamandastron stood firm in the distance, never seeming to get any closer. Tired and dispirited, they trekked onward, feeling the pangs of hunger and thirst. Apart from the odd seabird, whose curiosity had to be fended off forcefully, they were completely isolated. Logalog shielded his eyes, pointing ahead.
Look, what are those birds up to over yonder?
Some distance further on, gulls were wheeling and diving. There were two black, shapeless objects upon the sand. The birds were concentrating their attack on the smaller of these. Eager to see what was happening, the travellers broke into a trot. As they drew near to the scene, it became apparent that the gulls were harassing a living creature. Not far from where it lay, there was a ramshackle lean-to. Martin whirled his sling as he began running.
Come on, mates! Let's drive those scavengers off! Charge!
The creature was a thin, ragged rat. Gulls pecked ruthlessly at it as it lay unprotected on the sand. Under the fierce onslaught of stones and staves, the seabirds took to the air, screeching and wheeling above the intruders who had robbed them of their prey, and finally flying off to seek easier victims. Martin knelt and lifted the rat's head. The creature was very old and emaciated.
"There, there now, old one,"
he said, stroking sand out of its watery eyes.
"We're friends. You're safe now."
Logalog touched the rat's limp paw.
"Save your breath, Martin. This one has gone to the gates of Dark Forest."
"Dead?"
"Aye, dead as a stone. He must have been on his last legs when the birds found him. Let's get him to his hut."
Between them, they bore the rat into the tattered dwelling, placing it gently in a corner. They covered the body with an old piece of sailcloth. Then Gonf explored the contents of the hut.
"Look, mateys, water and supplies,"
he said triumphantly. There was a small quantity of dried shrimp and seaweed and a pouch of broken biscuit, but best of all, there were two hollow gourds filled with clean, fresh water. Dinny found a cache of driftwood. He began setting a small fire, using a flint from Martin's sling pouch and the steel of Gonf's dagger.
"Poor beast, I wonder who him were."
The mole shook his head sadly. Logalog poured water into cockle shells.
"Sea rat, no question of it. He's been chained to an oar too. I saw the scars on his paws. Mine were like that once."
Martin found a thick, deep shell blackened by fire on its outside. He began shredding shrimp and seaweed into it.
"But you said they used other creatures as oar slaves, yet this one was a rat."
Logalog poured water onto the ingredients and set the shell on two stones over the flames.
"Aye, but there's no telling with sea rats. They're savage and cruel. Maybe that one did something to offend his captain. I've seen them laughing and drinking together, then suddenly fighting to the death next moment over some silly little incident."
Night fell purple and grey in long rolling clouds. A stiff breeze sprang up from seaward as the four companions stood for a moment in silence around the pitiful canvas-wrapped figure in the small grave Dinny had dug in the sand. After the brief ceremony, they watched as the mole filled in the hole, decorating the mound with coloured seashells he had found.
"Ain't much, but far better'n see Ratner do free."
Salomon Dastron flared crimson against the dark sky as Gonf began to sing.
"Always the tide comes flowing in, ever it goes out again. Sleep neath the shore evermore, free from hunger and pain. Morning light will bring the sun, seasons go rolling on. Questing ever far from home, for Salamander strong."
Logalog shivered. He turned to the hut.
"Come on, you three. That soup should be ready now."
Martin bowed his farewell to the benefactor and followed the shrew inside.
"Aye, life must go on,"
he agreed.
"A dry place to sleep, a warm fire, some food, and a night's rest is what we all need. Tomorrow, we go to the Fire Mountain."
Far to the northwest of Camp Willow, the moles were making ready within sight of the riverbank. The great tunnelling was about to begin. Chib watched them from a plane tree. The feathered spy was now in semi-retirement. He had amassed a considerable store of candied chestnuts for his services. Still, he thought, there was no harm earning the odd extra nut by standing guard here. Formal and old Dinny paced and measured. Mole digging terms were bandied about freely.
"Needin' firm ground. Roots to make shorens to."
"Good down at grading to make water flow right.
And rock movers, Billum. He be a good rock mover."
"Aye, but mind he don't cross no old tunnelin'. Don't want flood going wrong ways."
Above in the trees, Amber's crew were dropping down timber for the sluice gates.
Mind out below!
Tip that end up, Bart, lad.
Come out of the way, young'un!
Right, let her go!
On the ground, Loam Hedge Mice were stripping, cleaning and jointing the wood. Abbess Germaine rolled up her wide sleeves and joined them with a will.
Columbine, here, child, sit on the end of this log and keep it still,
she called out.
I'll mark it here where the joint should be.
Excuse me, Abbess, where do we put these pine branches?
A strong young mouse asked.
Take them over there. Mr. Stickle has his little ones pulling the bark and twigs off all the new wood.
Hey, Ferdy, I think I might like to be a carpenter instead of a warrior. What about you?
Cogs decided.
Oh, I'm going to be a warrior carpenter, Cogs. Posy, will you stop carving patterns and strip that bark?
Oh, look, here's Miss Bella with some big stones. My, isn't she strong?
Posy exclaimed.
Can I put these stones here, Spike? Phew, I'll have to go back for more now. I saw Goody coming through the woods. I think it's beechnut crumble and elderberry fritters for lunch.
Hooray, my favourite!
Ferdy said delightedly.
Don't forget to wash those paws in the river before you eat,
Bella reminded them.
But Miss Bella, all as work beasts get mucky paws,
Cogs protested.
Shows you've been working hard.
Oh, and what about little beasts? They get mucky paws just playing. You scrub them with some bank sand, young Cogs.
The woodlanders stood by after lunch until old Dinny was brought to the spot where the tunnels would begin. Three young champion digging moles were there, Billum, Soil Flyer and Earthclaw. They stood respectfully to one side as Formole escorted old Dinny forward. Billum presented the Ancient One with a beaker full of October ale. He quaffed most of it in one gulp. Emptying the rest on the ground, where the work was to take place, old Dinny recited,
Moles are tunnelling deep and far, moles are digging her that we are.
Formole nodded approvingly. Old Dinny was quite a solemn mole versifier. He raised a gnarled claw to the three champions. They went to it with a will. Amid loud cheers, other teams would follow up, widening and shoring in their wake. The great tunnelling of Mossflower had begun. Hidden by a screen of leaves in a high elm, a wood pigeon was witness to a very strange scene in the woods south of Kertir. Sarmina, armed with a bow and arrows, was talking to the surrounding foliage.
I know you're there, brother. Oh, it's no use hiding. The Queen of the Thousand Eyes will find you. You can be sure.
The wood pigeon remained perfectly still. No point in offering a handy target to a wildcat with bow and arrows, he decided, even if she were looking for someone else.
Come on out, Gingervere. Show yourself. This is between me and you.
Silence greeted the challenge. Sarmina smiled slyly.
Think you're clever, don't you? Not half as clever as your sister. I know your little game. I'll find you.
The wildcat queen continued padding through the still forest, sometimes hiding behind a tree, often doubling back on her own tracks, always on the alert. Brog and Ratflank were sitting in the larder. As captains, they decided it was their prerogative to sample some of the remaining rations. The two officers stuffed bread and guzzled cider from a half-empty cask. There was a knock at the door. Hastily they swallowed and wiped their whiskers. Brog stamped about, kicking sacks and checking casks, as he called out,
Yes? Who is it?
It's Squint, the stout captain.
A thin, reedy voice piped back at him. The pair relaxed.
Come in, Squint. What do you want?
Brog asked. The stout entered. He stood to attention before his superiors.
I followed Her Majesty, just like you told me to, Captain Brog.
Well, where did she go?
South, into Mossflower. She took a bow and arrows with her. I kept well out of sight and watched. Funny, though, she kept ducking here and bobbing there, hiding between trees and so on.
What for?
Her brother, you know, Gingervere. She kept calling out his name. Went on like that for ages. I thought I'd better come back here and report to you.
Ratflank wiped a crumb from his paw.
You did well, Squint,
he began. Brog silenced him.
You keep quiet. I'm giving the orders around here.
He turned on the unfortunate stoat.
You thought you'd better come back and report, eh? Who told you that you had permission to think? Do you realise that you've left your queen out there alone in the forest at the mercy of any roving band of woodlanders?
But, Captain, you told me
Silence! Speak when you're spoken to, stout. Now, you get back out there on a double, me bucko, and don't come back until me lady does, and that's an order.
Squint stood bewildered until Ratflank joined in the chastisement.
You hear, Captain Brog? On the double now. 1-2, 1-2, 1-2. Step lively, Squint.
The stoat double marched backwards out of the larder. Brog and Ratflank fell back upon the sacks, laughing.
Oh, proper thickhead, that one, eh? Oh, it's not too bad, this officer lag, Brog.
I'll say it isn't.
Brog agreed.
Keep the troops on their mettle while I inspect the larder, eh?
Righto, Captain Brog. I'll go up and turn them all out for an arms inspection and chuck a few in the guardhouse for having dirty spears. You keep checking round here.
That's it, Captain Ratflank. You make them jump.
When his companion had gone, Brog rooted about under some sacks. He came up with a stone jar, half full of strawberry jam. Upending it on his snout, he smacked the bottom with his paw to free the sticky sweet. Some of it actually went down his mouth. The rest stuck to his nose and whiskers, and he gave a jammy giggle.
Too good for the troops, this stuff.
Squint dashed heedlessly through the woods, pushing aside bushes, cracking twigs and branches as he followed the trail. Sarmina was not aware that Brog had ordered her to be followed. Stealthily, she slipped behind an outcrop of firs, fitting the arrow to the bow as she followed her pursuer's noisy progress.
Come to me, Ginger Veer.
Sarmina crooned softly under her breath.
Run quickly, your sister awaits you.
Squint ploughed headlong past the firs bush. The string twanged mercilessly. He lay face down, with the arrow protruding from the back of his neck. Sarmina stood over the fallen stoat, her mad eyes seeing only what they wanted to.
There's an end to it, brother. You'll never trick me again.
Chapter 34. The gourds of water had been lashed to both ends of a stave. Any other food that could be packed was carried along. The four travellers had a new spring to their step. Now they were free from hunger, and the mountain was much nearer. Since early morning they had been on the move, glad to be away from the hut and the memory of its dead occupant. The going was easier and lighter. The weather stayed fine. Late afternoon found them seated by a shallow rock pool. Logalog munched a biscuit, keeping a weather eye on a crab lodged beneath a rock.
I don't like those things. You never know when one's going to do a quick scuttle at you.
Gonf wiggled his paws in the sun-warmed shallows.
Oh, don't know. I quite fancy another dancing lesson if our friend there is in the mood.
They laughed at the thought of their last encounter with a crab. Martin glanced up at Salamanderston.
Look, you can just see the light faintly. Whatever it is, must burn continuously. Do you suppose it is a fire lizard, Din?
Brr, I don't be a known of such creatures. Brr, fire dragons indeed. What my old grandford say of them, I don't know.
Nor do I, but one thing I do know,
Logalog said, nodding toward the mountain.
That place is all that stands between sea rats and the land. They fear it and hate it.
Gonf dried his paws.
Then why don't they go around it?
Because it's there, I suppose.
Logalog shrugged.
It stands as a challenge. The ship I was on avoided it like the plague, but not Captain Ripfang, master of the vessel Bloodway. He's the most black-hearted sea rat of them all. Ripfang's had many battles around Salamandastron. They say he swore a mighty oath never to rest until he rules that mountain.
Martin stood stretching his limbs.
But what's up there? What do they fight against?
Logalog shook his head.
Some say one thing, some another. Fire dragons, armoured monsters or phantoms can strike a creature down without touching it. Who knows?
They'll only be us to find the truth,
Gonf remarked, shouldering the supplies.
What chance do monsters stand against a prince of mouse thieves, a warrior and a champion digger, not forgetting a shrew like yourself, matey? Come on, let's get going.
Towards evening, with the mountain burning bright above them, Martin first noticed they were being watched.
Do you see anything, Gonf?
He asked when he told his companions.
No, matey, but I know what you mean. I can feel the hairs on my neck rising. What about you, Din?
Oh, my digging claws be a-telling me summat, though what it be, I don't know.
Logalog was in agreement, too.
Aye, just a sort of feeling, really. Do you see that lump of something or other out by the tide line? I could swear it moved a moment ago.
Don't stare at it.
Martin warned them.
Keep going. Shortly, we'll make as if we're camping down for the night, but we'll lie down with paws to weapons, keeping our wits about us. them. Let them make their move.
The travellers chose an open spot away from the rocks. They lit a small driftwood fire and lay around it, feeling very vulnerable. Martin kept his eyes slitted against the guttering fire, clutching his sling in one paw and his sword hilt in the other. Agonising moments stretched away. Still, there was no sign of movement. The friends began to think that their suspicions had been groundless. Night had fallen, and it was quite warm. There was not even a breeze to disturb the loose sand. The fire burned lower. Despite himself, Martin began to feel sleepy. He fought to keep his eyes open. Dinny's soft snores reached his ears. Gonf was lying too still to be fully awake.
I say, did you fellows do a bunk from the jolly old sea rats?
A voice said softly in Martin's ear.
No, we've come all the way from Moss.
Martin answered in a dozy murmur. He sprang up, whirling his sling. Lying amongst them by the fire were three hares. The warrior mouse was shocked and angry with himself.
Stand up and fight, you dirty sneaks!
He challenged them. The nearest hare held up his paws to show they were unarmed. His companions smiled innocently at the travellers.
Hello, chaps. I'm Trubs.
I'm Wather, capital W and O, don't you know?
I'm Verfring, double F, no E. How'd you do?
The sling dropped from Martin's paw.
Very well, thank you. How did you get here?
Oh, this way and that, old chap.
Dodge and weave, you know.
How the dickens do we ever get anywhere?
Dinny scratched his nose and stared hard at the sand-coloured hares. It was hard to distinguish them from their background.
Drugs and all, did he say?
He asked sleepily.
No, no. It's Trubs, old sport.
Wather, at your service.
Well, then I've got to be for Fring, I suppose.
Gonf took the initiative. He saw immediately that the strange trio were friendly. He made a deep bow.
Pleased to meet you, I'm sure. My name is Gonf, Prince of Mouse Thieves. This is our leader, Martin the Warrior. Here we have young Dinny, the world's best digger, with the latest addition to our little band, Logalog, a shrew and an excellent boat builder.
Paws were shaken warmly. Then the three hares were invited to sit by the fire with the travellers. It amused Martin and his friends how the hares spoke in turn.
Well, well, this is comfy. Tell us all about yourself.
Rather. What neck of the old country you bods from?
Live far from here, do you?
Martin explained the nature of their quest. At the mention of Bella's father, Boar the Fighter, a twinkle passed between the eyes of the hares. The warrior continued the tale up until the time they had found the rat on the shore.
Well, that's our story,
he concluded.
Now, what's yours? How do you three come to be out here, in the middle of nowhere, next to a fire mountain?
Actually, that'd be telling.
I second that, old bean.
Oh, yes, quite.
Getting a straight answer from either Trubs, Wather or Fring was difficult, to say the least. Gonf tried the casual approach.
Well, you can either stay here with us, mateys, or be off about your business. We've got to get a proper night's sleep so that we can climb that mountain tomorrow.
The three hares shuffled about a bit, then their tone became more businesslike.
Ah, the mountain. Actually, we've been sent down here to you.
To lead you to the mountain, you see.
Would you mind awfully coming along with us?
Logalog clapped his paws in delight.
Ha-ha, now you're talking.
The hares wiggled their long ears appreciatively.
Yes, I suppose we are talking, really.
Never alone, though. Always together, you'll notice.
Silly, really, I suppose. Do hope you'll forgive us, what?
Mateys!
Gonf chuckled.
We'll forgive you anything if you can take us up that mountain.
It's not actually up, don't you see?
No, it's sort of under, don't you know?
But we are glad you're coming with us, chaps.
Dinny scratched his head.
Oh, war, us'n's be a-comin' with you, all right? But whom sent ye for us?
You will soon see.
I'll say you will.
Most definitely.
Martin kicked sand on the fire to extinguish it.
Righto. Lead on, Trubs, Wither and Fring.
Oh, I say, good show. Let's all go together.
One never leads triple initiative, what?
Jolly good idea, chums.
As they started towards the mountain, the three hares produced strangely shaped shells. They blew into them simultaneously, making a treble note, not unlike that of three small trumpets. The sound echoed across the stillness of the shore. Immediately, the scene lit up like daylight as a huge blast of flame rose from Salomon Dastron. A voice like thunder on a hot noon boomed out with an immense rumble.
Come in peace to the mountain of fire lizards.
Hearing the gigantic sound effect, Logalog threw himself face down upon the sand with both paws over his ears, but the hares seemed hardly to notice it.
Oh, golly. Oh, logger things falling over.
Must be in a blue funk about the boomer, eh?
I expect so. Up you get, old fellow.
It was a narrow passage between the sand and the rocks. They went in single file. At the end was a small cave. Trubs tugged at a concealed cord. They had to jump aside as a stout ladder clattered down from the darkened recesses overhead.
Right up you go, laddie.
No, no, after you, old chap.
Oh, really, I insist.
Martin jumped up to the rungs of the ladder.
I'll go first, if it'll save you three arguing.
What a spiffing idea.
Sensible chap, what?
Rather, indeed he is.
At the top of the ladder, they found themselves in a broad upward-running passage, hewn into the living rock. The ladder was hoisted, and they walked up the steep incline, lit by torches at regular intervals in wall sconces. From somewhere above, there was a steady roaring sound.
What be that girt noise, masters?
Dinny asked curiously.
Could be the jolly old fire lizards.
Then again, it might not be.
You'll soon find out, old fellow.
Five flights of stairs hewn into the rock, one more cave and another steep corridor led them to their destination, the very heart of Salamandastron. Bane the Fox came down the dusty road from the north with his band of mercenary plunderers. They numbered about 60 in all, mainly foxes with a scattering of rats and weasels, a motley group, part tramp, part scavenger, mostly thieves. All were well armed and capable, despite their ragged appearance. Food they had in plenty, fish, birds and vegetables to cook with them. By craft, guile and murder, they had crossed the boundless northern lands, seeking warmer climes and easier living. Bane was weary of living on his paws, always on the move. He was on the lookout for some fat, prosperous little community where he could hold sway without much argument. Then he spotted Katir, a grand ruin that had seen better days, but the possibilities were there. Backed by woodland, fronted by flatland, practically skirting a road used by travellers, it was a dream come true. Leaving orders for his band to camp in the ditch at the roadside out of sight, Bane circled Katir by himself to spy out the lie of the land. The more he saw of Katir, the more he fancied it. There would be no more winters in the freezing Northlands once he gained entry to this place. Striding purposefully around the woodland edge at the south side, he practically bumped into Sarmina returning from the forest. It would have been hard for a bystander to tell who was the more surprised, the fox or the wildcat. As Sarmina quickly knocked an arrow to her bowstring, Bane's paw shot down to the curved sword he wore at his side. There was a moment's silence as they both stood still, gathering their wits. Finally, Bane cocked a paw toward the fortress.
Whose place is this?
It is mine. Who are you?
Sarmina demanded haughtily.
They call me Bane. I'm a fighter. But if there's an easier way of getting what I want, I'll always try it.
A fighter? My name is Sarmina, Queen of the Thousand Eyes. That is my headquarters. It is called Katir.
Thousand Eyes?
Bane said thoughtfully.
There was only ever one with that name, old Verdorga Green Eyes. He was a wildcat, too.
Yes, he was my father.
Was?
Verdorga is dead now. I alone rule here. If you want, you may come into my service. Katir is in need of fighters. Are there any with you?
60 in all, trained warriors. Foxes, rats and weasels.
I don't trust foxes. Why should I trust you?
Who trusts who these days?
Bane snorted.
I'm not particularly fond of wildcats. I fought alongside your father and against him too.
No doubt you have, but that is in the past now. You say you have 60 warriors at your command. What would be your terms if you came to serve Katir?
Make me an offer.
I'll do better than that. I'll make you a guarantee, Bane.
Sarmina told the fox.
There are certain creatures, otters, squirrels, mice, hedgehogs, woodlanders. One time they used to serve my family. Now they choose to live in Mossflower Woods and resist me. Once we have flushed them out of hiding together and enslaved them, then you can have an equal place alongside me. We will rule Mossflower jointly.
Bane's paw left the sword hilt.
Damn! I'll take you at your word.
And I will take you at yours.
Samina replied, clasping the proffered paw. Their untruthful eyes smiled falsely at each other. Samina saw that at least Bane had told the truth about his followers, ragged and unkempt, but fighters to a beast. They entered Katir together. Bane felt as if the place had been built for him. The uniformed soldier of Katir looked askance at the tattered but well-fed band of mercenaries. Bane's fighters cast scornful eyes over the ill-fed soldiers in their cumbersome livery. Samina and Bane were closeted together in the Queen's chamber. She listened to his ideas with respect. Treachery could come later. But for now, she gave the fox full credit as an experienced campaigner. Bane's plan was simple.
Don't give them an inch. Show them you mean business. Forget about subterfuge and spies. That only makes for prolonged war. Strike hard and be ruthless. We have a superior number of trained fighters. Start tomorrow morning. Have the full strength out in skirmish line. Comb the forest thoroughly. Kill any who resist and take the rest prisoner. It's the only way to get results, believe me.
Bold words, Bane.
Samina told him approvingly.
But have you tried fighting squirrel archers? They can vanish through the treetops as quick as you can think.
Then burn the trees or chop them down. I've seen it all before. If small creatures scurry off down holes, then block them up. Fill every possible exit. That's all they understand. You take my word, it works every time. I know I've done it.
Samina pointed out of the window at the fastness of Mossflower.
Could you do it again, out there?
With our combined forces? Easily.
Then we start tomorrow morning,
she said decisively.
At first light.
Columbine was learning to use one of the smaller squirrel bows. Lady Amber had set up a target while they patrolled the digging areas to protect the workers.
Pull the string right back,
Lady Amber instructed.
Look along the arrow shaft with one eye. See the target? Now breathe out and release the arrow at the same time. Fine shot, Columbine.
The shaft stood quivering near the target's centre.
Ha! I'm getting better at it all the time, Lady Amber.
You certainly are. Keep it up and you'll soon be as good as me.
Formal and old Dinny came trundling up. The mole leader tugged his snout to Amber.
Marm, Dinny and I filled up yon oller oak stump where he'd gone out Katir from,
he reported. Old Dinny plucked the arrow from the target and returned it to Columbine.
Or that we have,
he agreed.
Don't want flooding coming out there. We've got a flood cat place, not on woodlands.
Amber sighed.
It's a long dig. Let's hope we can do it before the cat and her army make any surprise moves.
Skipper sprang dripping from the river.
Never fear, Amber. My crew and I have done our bit. We've dug from under the water clear to the floodgates your crew sunk into the ground, where the moles began digging. Mind, I wish we could tunnel as well as Billum's soil flyer and Earthclaw. Strike me colours, you want to see those lads shift earth.
Formal and old Dinny smiled with pleasure, but Amber slammed the paw against the target.
I just wish there was more my squirrels and I could do. Oh, I know we're patrolling and keeping watch, but we don't seem to be contributing any real work.
She sighed again.
Then why don't you let me and my crew do a bit of guard duty?
Skipper suggested.
We could certainly do with the rest after all that underwater digging. Listen, Billum reckons they'll strike some big rocks soon. Why don't you see if you could rig up something that'll help the moles to move them?
Amber was delighted with the suggestion.
Righto, I'll get Bartlad and Oakapple onto it. They could rig tree hoists. Thanks, Skip.
Chib had flown a wide patrol merely for the exercise, but soon he grew weary of such energetic practices. Perching on a branch not far from the sleeping Argylar, he listened to the eagle talking in its sleep.
Pine marten, one little pine marten, that's all. Maybe they taste like pine.
Chapter 35. Despite the feeling of awe, Gonf could not help smiling to himself. After watching Salamandastan from afar, seeing the column of fire that spouted from its top, and recalling the very name meant Mountain of the Fire Lizard, the little mouse thief immediately saw it was a trick worthy of some mind as clever and resourceful as his own. It was more than a cave, he decided. It was a huge mountain hall. At its centre was a mighty furnace-like forge. A towering column of rockwork took it up to the ceiling, away out of sight. Surrounded by hares, there stood the father of all badgers. He was pure silver from tip to tail, with a double broad creamy white stripe either side of his forehead. Above the thickly muscled limbs and barrel chest, a pair of wild eyes surveyed the newcomers. Giving the mighty bellows handle a powerful downward swing, he tossed a red-hot spear point with a quick flick of his bare paws. It landed in a water trough with a boiling hiss of bubbles. As the badger stumped across to them, Martin could almost feel the reverberations through the rock floor. He towered above them, extending a calloused paw that resembled a chunk of rock.
Welcome to Salamandastron, friends. I am Boar the Fighter.
The big voice boomed and echoed about the hall. His paw enveloped by Boar's, Martin felt very tiny. Now the full impact of Bella's words came to him. Here indeed was one to save Mossflower. The silver badger looked as if he could tear Katir to pieces with his paws.
I am Martin the Warrior. This is young Dinny, and these two are Gonf and Logalog. I have travelled from Mossflower with my friends to bring a message from your daughter, Bella of Brock Hall.
Boar unfastened his apron and shed it.
All this I know. Come, let us go to my cave. It is more comfortable there. My hares will bring you food and drink, and you can clean yourselves up.
As they followed Boar, Gonf whispered to Martin.
How does he know, matey? Is he a magic badger?
Shh!
Martin silenced the mouse thief.
Watch your manners. We'll get to know soon enough.
Boar's cave was indeed comfortable. There were ledges to sit or lie upon, covered in velvety moss. Plants grew around the walls and hung from the ceiling. There was a rough rock table and a pool in one corner, with steam rising from its surface.
The pool is heated from my forge,
Boar said, noticing their surprise.
You may bathe there later. You will observe that it is never cold here, again, thanks to the forge. But please be seated. Here comes the food.
The hares brought in new bread, fresh salad, baked fish, mint water, and a selection of last autumn's fruits, crystallised in honey. After the frugal seashore meals, the four travellers ate like a regiment many times their number. Boar watched them with something approaching amusement on his gigantic face. Gonf gave him a friendly wink.
So, the flames of the forge carry up that rock flue and shoot out the top of Salamandastron, eh?
Boar winked back at Gonf.
You are a very perceptive little fellow, Gonf the Thief.
Prince of Mouse Thieves, matey,
Gonf corrected him.
But how did you know he was a thief?
Martin interrupted. Boar leaned his chin on muscular paws, bringing his eyes level with Martin.
I know many things, little mouse. Later I will show you how. Now, is that young Dinny, grandson of my childhood friend Dinny the Mole?
There's a boar, that I be. You know my gran for old Dinny.
Of course I do. Is the old rascal still going strong?
Oh, he be fair and a flea, and older than 20 hogs.
Dinny laughed.
Good, I'm glad to hear it. And what about you, Logalog?
Sir Boar, I'm a boat builder, one-time leader of the Northwest Shrew tribe.
Oh, why one-time leader?
Because I'm all that's left of my tribe in freedom.
Logalog explained.
We were captured by sea rats. I was the only one to escape the galleys.
Boar's eyes hardened to a burning ferocity, and the bones in his paws cracked audibly as he ground them together.
Sea rats! Dirty, treacherous, murdering scum!
Martin was shocked at the deep hatred in Boar's voice. He listened intently as the badger continued.
Not only do they burn and plunder among honest creatures, but they are savage to their own kind, sinking each other's ships, murdering their own companions for an extra pawful of loot.
Logalog has told me of a sea rat called Ripfang of the Bloodwake.
Martin interrupted.
Do you know him?
Boar pointed seaward.
That one! He's out there now! My spies have been watching him all spring, sailing from north to south of here, waiting his chance to attack Salamandastron. Ripfang is the most evil of all sea rats. He has fought and sunk all others who sail in these waters, pressing their crews as slaves in his service. He is also the cleverest and most cunning of them all.
In what way is he clever and cunning?
Gomph asked, noting the concern on Boar's face.
Well, he has never feared Salamandastron or the legends that surround this place. Ripfang is very daring, too. He has personally been here and knows that it is only myself and a few hares who keep the myth of the mountain alive. Others we can scare off, but not Ripfang. It is written that soon he will mount a major war against Salamandastron.
This was the second time that Boar had spoken of things that had not yet happened. Martin was curious.
You say it is written, Boar.
The badger stood tall, pointing at Martin.
What is that broken weapon you wear about your neck, like a medal?
He asked. The warrior mouse took it off and gave it to Boar, who inspected it closely as Martin explained.
That was once the sword of my father. He was a warrior. How it came to be broken, I will tell you. Because your daughter, Bella, asked me to inform you about all that is going on in Mossflower.
As they ate and rested, Martin told Boar how he came to Katir, the plight of the woodlanders, and Bella's plea for Boar to return to his birthright and free the land. Throughout the narrative, Boar the fighter said nothing. He paced the room, turning the broken sword hilt over in his paws, looking at it as if it carried some message for him. Martin finished his recitation of the events.
So you see, Mossflower has need of its son, Boar,
he concluded.
You must come back with us.
There was silence. When the silver badger spoke, he did not answer the plea.
This is a very ancient sword hilt. A good one. I can make it into a new weapon. I must give it a blade that will not be broken again by anything.
Martin saw that Boar would not be pressed for answers. He decided to comply until the badger's mood changed.
Thank you, Boar. I would dearly like to see my father's old sword forged into a new weapon. Since it was broken, I felt like half a warrior carrying half a sword.
Boar shook his massive head.
Your mistake, Martin. You are a real warrior, a full and true one. You have the heart, I can see it in you. But when I make this sword anew, you must always remember that it is not the weapon, but the creature that wields it. A sword is a force for good, only in the paws of an honest warrior. But enough now. You and your friends are tired. I will talk to you tomorrow and show you many things. Sleep here. If you wish to bathe the dust of travel away, I will send my hares with dry towels for you.
Boar took his leave of the travellers. The hot bath was deep and refreshing. Trubs, Wather and Fring turned up with huge soft towels.
One each, you chaps. No splashing.
Wash behind your ears, old sport.
Night-night. See you in the morning.
Dry, full and warm, they lay on the moss-covered ledges. Dinny yawned.
So we come to Salamandastor at last.
Logalog stared at the high ceiling.
A wonderful place indeed. Strange creature that boar, eh, Martin?
Oh, He'll tell us what he intends when he's good and ready,
Martin said airily.
Let's get some sleep. I've a feeling tomorrow's going to be a full day.
Gonf could not resist a rendition of his latest song.
At last the weary travellers have reached their heart's desire. We quested overland to reach the mountain of the fire, to meet with Bor the fighter, who knows secrets dark and deep.
Gonf sat up, scratching his whiskers.
What rhymes with deep, mateys?
Three wet towels knocked him flat.
You might try sleep.
Chapter 36. The woodlanders were caught completely unawares in the early morning. Led by Bane and Sarmina, the joint forces hit swiftly. Luckily, the little ones were still abed at Brockhall, and the loam hedge mice were preparing breakfasts. The only creatures at the diggings were moles, otters and a few squirrels. Bane's mercenaries dashed in, hacking madly, backed by Sarmina's spears. Earthclaw, Billum and Soilflyer were deep underground. The rest were caught in the open. It was chaos. Skipper took an arrow in his side. Lady Amber lost an ear to a fox's sword. The woodlands were alive with yelling, slashing animals. There was only one thing to do. Retreat with all speed. Disregarding his wound, Skipper stood fast with a small band of otters, hurling stones as he roared aloud.
Get away! Quickly!
Amber and the squirrels managed to escape through the treetops, leaving two slain on the ground. Skipper and his otters saw to it that the few moles were safely carried off across the river, before vanishing into the water themselves. Sarmina gave out howls of victory across the now silent woods. Bane leaned on his curved sword, breathing heavily.
See? I told you they're no match for us. Oh, but they can put up a tidy fight, even when they're outnumbered.
Brog swaggered up and saluted.
Two squirrels, three otters and a mole slain, my lady,
he reported. He was about to turn away when Bane tugged on his cloak.
How many of ours lost?
He asked tersely.
Three ferrets, a stork and a weasel, four rats and a fox.
Bane shook his head in amazement.
Good job we outnumbered them. No prisoners?
No, sir. Not a one.
Pity.
Rathflank limped up, nursing a cracked paw.
We've found three big holes over there by the river,
he said. The commander strode across to the spot. Bane bent down and sniffed the earth around each hole, while Sarmina stood watching.
What do you suppose they were up to?
She wondered. Bane spat into one of the holes.
Your guess is as good as mine. We didn't get time to chop the trees or fire the woodland. Maybe there's some of them still down these holes.
Then we can fill them in.
Sarmina grinned wickedly.
Brog, get some big rocks. Fetch that timber lying about there. Use the spears, fill them in well and press the earth down hard. They'll be imprisoned down there until the air runs out.
Bane wiped his sword and sheathed it.
Well, that's that. There's not much my band can do round here. We led back to Katir and try another dawn raid tomorrow.
Sarmina was right beside the fox leader. She was not about to stop out in the woods with her soldiers, leaving Bane to take over Katir in her absence.
Right, Bane. I'll leave Brog with some of the others to get on with the job. The rest of us will go back to Katir with you.
As they marched off through the morning brightness of Mossflower, one of Bane's foxes sniggered as he trod on the back of Ratflank's cloak.
Yeah, I think your pussycat queen's frightened of us knocking the fortress door on her.
Ratflank tugged his cloak free, sneering.
Oh, yeah. Well, you just try calling her pussycat to her face, hero.
The first Bella knew of the attack was when the Corrim leaders regathered their crews at Brockhall. Abbas Jermaine and Columbine organised bandages and herbs. Loam hedge mice bustled about, ministering to the wounded. Skipper refused to stand still, and Goody Stickle chased about after him, dabbing at his injury, trying to get a bandage around it. There were tears of rage in the otter's eyes.
Six lost by the fur! Where did they come from? Who was that fox with all those scruffy murderers? Zarmina could never have done this on her own.
Lady Amber adjusted the bandage around her head so she could see properly.
I heard someone call him Bane,
she told him.
Get Chib. Tell him to go to Katir. He'll have to be very careful. But we've got to find out all we can about this other lot.
Formal tapped a digging claw upon the table.
Us will have to do summit about Earthclaw, Soilflyer and Billum. They'm stucken down holes. Who be a telling what they villains do to 'ee?
Yes,
Bella agreed.
It's most important that we rescue the moles from the tunnels. Next on the list is to make sure that the area around Brockhall is completely hidden. If they don't know where we are, they can't attack us. Furthermore, we'll need to find a second hideout, somewhere deeper into the east of Mossflower. If ever Brockhall is discovered, another refuge will be very necessary.
Messengers were sent out to find Chib, and the woodlanders set about erasing the tracks around Brockhall, while Germaine and her mice tended the wounded with dedicated care. The memory of the murderous ambush still lingered. Lady Amber was not one to forget. Neither was Skipper. Before noon, Chib had reported back to the Corran, but the news was not good.
Very serious. It seems that this Fox Bane is an expert, a mercenary with a band of about 60. Excuse me. Evidently, they're planning another ambush, as deep as they can get into Mossflower in one early morning march. Tomorrow, they plan to set out at dawn in a skirmish line, killing or capturing all before them.
Columbine held up her paw.
Then we must not give them any targets. Everyone should stay here completely out of sight, in case Brockhall is discovered.
Bella nodded approvingly.
I second that. Good thinking, Columbine. Are we all agreed?
There was a low murmur of assent. Nobody noticed the look that passed between Amber and Skipper. In the early afternoon, Bella left Commander Brockhall to the Abbess and Columbine. Alone, the Badger set out eastward into the woodland depths to find a second place of refuge. Chapter 37. Martin woke feeling pleasantly fresh. He opened his eyes to see Bors supervising the laying of a beautiful breakfast table. Hares were wreathing flowers across the board. The food they brought had been grown in small gardens dotted about the landward side of the mountain top. Bors had small rosebuds and sweet peas twined in his beard. A garland of ivy leaves sat on his head. The huge badger looked like some benevolent spirit come down from the mountain, holding a green wand in his paw. Pointing to a high arrow window that streamed down golden sunlight on him, he boomed out to the wakening travellers.
Welcome to Salamandastron on the first day of a new summer.
Young Dinny's heart leapt at the sight of Bors and the mention of his favourite season.
Bors! I dearly like summer tides, Sir Bors.
During a fabulous meal, in which all took part, they were introduced to the other hares who lived in the mountain. Besides Trubs, Wather and Fring, there was also Harebell, Honeydew and Willow, three doe-eyed beauties who could render Trubs and Co. speechless with a single flutter of their eyelashes. There were four others, a huge fellow named Buffheart, his wife Lupin, and their two young ones, Starbuck and Breeze.
These hares are my eyes and ears,
Bors explained.
I can stretch out my paws through them and feel what is going on for miles around. They are also fearsome fighters, yes, every one of them. Don't let silly talk and pretty eyes fool you. They'll show you later. As for the present, they'll take your friends off and show them something of this mountain we live on. Martin, will you come with me? I would talk to you alone.
The warrior mouse followed the silver badger up through many caves, flights of rock stairs and long passages. High up the pair went into the topmost cave. It was still warm from the heat of the forge. Martin looked out of a long open window to see the beach below and the waters beyond, sparkling and glinting in early summer sunlight.
This is where you heard my voice when you were down on the shore last night,
Bors whispered to him.
I must whisper now, because if I were to raise my voice, the echoes would deafen you.
Martin nodded, fearing to speak, lest his voice did the same. Bors smiled, patting the mouse warrior lightly.
You are wise beyond your seasons. Now do not be surprised by what I am going to show you. This is for our eyes alone, Martin. We two warriors.
The badger went to the left wall between the entrance and the window, where there was a long, deep crack that appeared to be a natural seam in the rock. Setting his great blunt claws deep into the fissure, he began to pull. Martin stood in awe at the frightening brute strength that bore the fighter. Steely sinews and giant muscles bulged and strained as the badger pulled, grunting quietly deep in his chest. Froth appeared on his jaws with the exertion. Still he pulled with might and main, plate-like back paws set flat on the rock floor, ponderous claws gouging at the bare stone. With a low rumble, the entire wall started to swing outward. Martin watched wide-eyed, paws and jaws clenched tight, willing the silver badger to perform this great feat of strength. Boar set his shoulders against one side and his paws against the other. He pushed hard, and the secret doorway stood wide open. Without a word, they walked inside. It was a narrow hall. One side of the wall was covered in minute carvings, the other was smooth, whilst the far end was a rounded alcove. What Martin saw there stopped him in his tracks so fast that Boar stumbled on him. A badger in full armour was seated on a throne in the alcove. Martin felt Boar's paw upon his back.
No need to be afraid, little friend.
The badger's voice was calm.
This is my father, old Lord Brocktree.
Boar padded silently forward. He touched the armoured badger reverently.
I went questing for Salamandastron just as my father did,
he explained.
When I found this place, he was still alive and well. He ruled here, and we were happy together for many seasons. In the end, he was called to the gates of Dark Forest because of his great age. Now he is part of the legend of the mountain, as he wished to be. I did this for him. This is his tomb.
Boar gave the armour a gentle rub. It glowed dimly. Walking back to the entrance, he called Martin over.
Let us start at the beginning. See here.
Boar indicated a carved line of badger figures.
Our kind have come here since creatures first felt the sun. Only warriors, the brave of heart and strong of will, are listed here. See, Earthrun the Gripper, Spear Lady Gorse, Bluestripe the Wild, Setarula, the list goes on and on. Look, here is my father, Lord Brocktree. Here I am next to him. There are the spaces for those to come after us. I see you wish to ask me a question. Carry on, Martin. I release you from your silence.
Martin did not need to speak. He pointed at a block of picture carvings set apart from the others.
They are good likenesses of you, I think,
Boar whispered. The scene was a small frieze depicting the activities of four creatures. Three were intentionally small, but the fourth was unmistakably Martin, even to the broken sword about his neck. Boar looked at Martin with a strange expression on his face.
Friend, believe me, I did not carve these pictures here, nor did my father. How long they have been here, I do not know. I accept it as part of the legend of Salamandastron. You must too. You are the largest figure, and here are your friends. See, here you are leading them toward the mountain. Here is Salamandastron, and here are you again, emerging from it with your friends. You no longer carry the broken sword about your neck. You are holding a bright new sword. As for the rest, well, your guess is as good as mine.
Martin studied the picture closely.
Here is the sea.